भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकीनन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामय्यं तदाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणाललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानु सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांचा कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामो हरे रामो राम रामो हरे हरे। We begin the sixth chapter, the sixth canto. Chapter is entitled Progeny of the Daughters of Daksha. So this chapter mostly contains the different names of the daughters of Daksha Prajapati and their husbands. So this chapter will go through quickly. Shri Shuka Uvacha Tata Pracheta Soshiknyam अनुनीत स्वयंभुव षष्टिं संजनयामास दुहितृ पितृवत्सला।
Translation: Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear king, thereafter, at the request of Lord Brahma, Prajapati Daksha, who is known as Prachetas, begot 60 daughters in the womb of his wife Asikni. All the daughters were very affectionate towards their father."
So in the previous chapter, how Daksha Prajapati sent his 10,000 sons Harieshwas to perform austerities. Haribo. So his first 10,000 sons Harieshwas and the second 1,000 sons Savalashwas, were inspired by Narada Muni to practice bhakti in the path of renunciation, the Daksha Prajapati became very much frustrated. In fact, he cursed Narada Muni. But although he cursed Narada Muni, Daksha Prajapati repented after cursing Narada Muni. Prabhupada writes here that Daksha Prajapati repented his misunderstanding with Narada Muni, and then Daksha Prajapati, he became actually, he developed a mood of renunciation. He just wanted to retire from the household life. But then he was requested by Lord Brahma, please do not retire from household life, please continue to actually beget children. So then this time Daksha Prajapati, he begot a female children, because he knew that Narada Muni cannot make them renunciants, because renounced order is not meant for the females. The women, they make advancement just by being just by assisting their husbands. They also advance spiritually. So that's not renounced order is not meant for them. So therefore the Shastra has explained that a woman's duty is to be very chaste and faithful to her husband, and without separate endeavor she will share in all the profit the husband earns. In that sense, there is no, there are certain social restrictions for the women, but there are no restrictions for a woman to advance on a spiritual platform. On a material platform, yeah, there are certain restrictions in terms of adapting a renounced order or free mixing with others, etc. But on a spiritual platform, she has definitely opportunity to advance. Yes.
Like in Christianity, there are nuns, and this may be a deviation. The Brahmakumaris also, they call themselves Brahmakumaris only, and even in our Vaishnavism, we have Mirabai. I don't know whether she was married or no, but at least we recognize her as okay. So, how do we explain?
Yeah, in the Vaishnavism, there may be certain exceptions actually in the Vaishnavism. Some certain exception that cannot be made it into a normal rule. There may be some certain extraordinary personalities might be there, but still there was never, in the sense, just like in a brahmachari ashram or a lifelong, the system is actually there. But even in the case of the Mirabai or something, yeah, there may be extraordinary devotee having certain devotion, but there is never some acharyas or somebody they are recommending that one can become a sannyasi. That kind of system is never recommended, because it is not a it doesn't suit the women's psychology. In other traditions, they may call those traditions, but then there are so many problems associated with that which is not actually highlighted. For example, there will be so many affairs which happen between the nuns and others, which may not be highlighted, because it is not suited for the women to be alone. They need actually protection, either by a father, husband or a son. So when they are without that protection, they become very much subject to exploitation. Of course, it's not that we are generalizing, but generally the renounced order is not meant for them. And Prabhupada, when he went to the West, he started the Brahmacharini ashram, but that is not the same system. That is basically just to avoid the women getting exploited in the outside world by staying outside. So he created a system where they could at least stay in the temple, but ultimately they were supposed to get married. Not that they would just stay as renunciants.
Daksha is having the power to take a decision about the progeny in terms of sons or daughters. So how do you understand that nowadays people commit so much of violence because of this one fact? How do you understand that means?
Yeah, that is why Prabhupada mentions in I think 4th canto 22nd chapter Prithu Maharaj meeting the four Kumaras. In that chapter it's explained, there's a verse which says that Prithu Maharaj begot sons exactly according to his desire. So Prabhupada says that the science of begetting children exactly according to one's desire is practically unknown in today's circumstances. So there is definitely, there are proper procedures and there is proper process and certain rules and regulations. When a person follows them, one can beget children according to one's desire, not just in terms of male and female, but also according to the particular children with the particular qualities. So the scriptures they give actually they recommend different processes. For example, I think even the 3rd canto Prabhupada mentions that when Devahuti and the Kardama Muni, when they were uniting, Prabhupada quotes that the scriptures called as Kama Shastras or Kama Sutras, they describe in great detail about what kind of ornaments, what kind of fragrance one should actually apply on one's body in order to attract the opposite sex, like that. Different details are also given. So we may not have come across, but there are, it is definitely possible. So in the case of Daksha Prajapati's daughters, one thing we can find that regarding his attitude towards the daughters and the sons, in the case of his sons, he gave right training to his sons, but then he wanted the sons to make decision according to his desire, according to his choice. So generally the principle is that you give training, after giving the training you give the freedom for the person to make the decision, because once you know that the person is trained, that means one should not control the trained person. We should actually trust that person, and we give the freedom for the person to actually make the choice. But in the case of Daksha Prajapati, he sent his 10,000 sons for the training. In fact, even after the 10,000 sons were took to the path of renunciation, he sent the 1,000 sons again to the same place for performing tapasya. In that sense, he was dutiful in his actually in giving proper training to his sons. But then the mistake was that he had that controlling attitude of wanting his sons should make the choice about getting married according to his desire. So when they were actually inspired by Narada Muni to take the path of renunciation, so that actually made him angry. On the other hand, so there are two extremes. One is that giving training, and then after giving the training you still actually control that person's freedom. Another extreme is that you give freedom without giving training. So the Western society actually gives freedom without giving training. They give full freedom right from the very young age. There is no aspect of disciplining the children. But sometimes in the Vedic society or when it becomes when it gets distorted from the actual principles of training children, sometimes parents, especially we find it maybe in India, so many parents, they may give good training to their children, but then they want the children to actually make decision according to their choice. Like they try to control them. That is why the parents become actually frustrated when the children say join the Brahmachari ashram, or so they want the children to make the choice of which engineering or which branch or which this thing according to their choice. So that is another extreme. But in the case of Daksha, he did not the mistake which he made with respect to his sons, he did not make that mistake with respect to his daughters. So in the case of the daughters, you give the training in the principles of chastity, and another aspect of training is that do not allow free mixing with the opposite sex. But after giving the training, then you can give the freedom to the daughters to express their choice of whom they want to get married. But not even giving the freedom to express their choice of whom they want to get married, so that is something wrong. So if you remember in the third canto, 14th chapter, Diti is telling to Kashyapamuni that our father would actually ask us, would ask all of our daughters, myself and my sisters, as to whom we want to get married to. But daughters, because of their shyness, they would not express their choice to the father. And the father would come to know the choice of the daughters through the grandparents. And then they would actually arrange for a suitable this one. So in the again, here also there are two extremes. One extreme is that when the parents give complete freedom to the daughters, complete freedom in the sense that freedom also to mingle with the opposite sex, then the choice which they make based on their mixing with the opposite sex, and the choice which they make without the proper training in the principles of chastity being imparted, that choice would be very superficial. That most of the time that choice becomes wrong sometimes, because of their pre-mixing with the opposite sex, they want to get married to some boy, and then they get married, and then many times the marriage actually ends up in some problem or something. So this is one extreme. That's what the Western society is, that they give complete freedom. But again, the distortion of Vedic society is that the parents, okay, they don't allow the daughters to freely mix with the opposite sex. But when they don't even allow the daughters to express their choice as whom they want to get married to, so then that becomes like a too much restriction of the freedom. But Daksha Prajapati, at least the mistake which he committed with respect to his sons, that mistake he did not commit with respect to his daughters. According to the third canto description, that he would ask his daughters whom they want to get married to. And the daughters, because of hearing about different personalities, they developed attraction to certain sages or something. So then they expressed that choice through the grandparents, and then they got married to them. They did not actually make that choice based on some pre-mixing with the men before the marriage. So the next chapters describe the different which daughters Daksha Prajapati gave in marriage to which personalities. So Daksha Prajapati begot 60 daughters in the womb of his wife Ashikni. All of them very affectionate towards their father. Dasha Dharmaya Kayadad Vishad Trinava Chendave Bhutangira Krishavebhyo द्वे तार्क्ष्याय चापर.
He gave 10 daughters in charity to Dhanraj, Yamraj, 13 to Kashyap, first 12 and then one more, 27 to the moon god and 2 each to Angira, Krishava and Bhuta. The other 4 daughters were given to Kashyap. Thus Kashyap received 17 daughters in all.
Namadeyan, Namadeyan Yamusham Tvam सापत्यानां च मे शृणु यासां प्रसूति प्रसवै लोका आपूरितास्त्रयः.
Now please hear from me the names of all these daughters and their descendants who filled all the 3 worlds.
बाणुर्लम्बाककुद्यामेर् विश्वासाद्या मरुत्वती वसुर्मुहूर्ता संकल्पा धर्मपत्न्यः सुतान् शृणु.
द 10 डॉटर्स गिवन टू यमराज वर नेम्ड भानु लंबा कुकुद यामी विश्वा साध्या मुरुद्वती वसु मुहूर्ता एंड संकल्पा. नाउ हियर द नेम्स ऑफ देयर सन्स.
सो इफ यू रिमेंबर इन द फोर्थ कैंट ऑफ फर्स्ट चैप्टर आल्सो देयर वाज डिस्क्रिप्शन ऑफ द डॉटर्स ऑफ दक्ष प्रजापति एंड हुम दे गॉट मैरिड टू. सो हियर आल्सो देयर इज अ डिस्क्रिप्शन इन दैट फोर्थ कैंट ऑफ फर्स्ट चैप्टर. Daksha Prajapati, before he was cursed by Lord Shiva, so that description of that particular time. But this is after he was cursed by Lord Shiva, and then he got a goat's head, and then he performed austerities for 3 manvantaras, and then he was born as a Kshatriya. So now he got 60 daughters.
Banostu Deva Rishabha
इंद्रसेनस्ततो नृप विद्योत आसी लंबाया ततश्च स्तनयत्नवः.
ओ किंग, ए सन नेम्ड देवऋषभ वाज बोर्न फ्रॉम द वूम ऑफ भानु एंड फ्रॉम हिम केम ए सन नेम्ड इंद्रसेन. फ्रॉम द वूम ऑफ लंबा केम ए सन नेम्ड विद्योत हु जनरेटेड ऑल द क्लाउड्स.
ककुदसंकतस्तस्य कीकटस्तनयो यतः भुवो दुर्गाणि यामेय स्वर्गो नन्दिस्ततो भवत्.
From the womb of Kukuda came the son named Sankat, whose son was named Kikat. From Kikat came the demigods named Durga. From Yami came the son named Swarga, whose son was named Nandi.
So you can read the translation of the remaining verses. I'll just add wherever it is required.
Verse 7. The sons of Vishwa were the Vishwadevas, who had no progeny. From the womb of Sadhya came Sadhyas, who had a son named Arthasiddhi. Text 8. The 2 sons who took birth from the womb of Marutvati were Marutvan and Jayant. Jayant, who is an expansion of Lord Vasudeva, is known as Upendra. The demigods named the Muhurtikas took birth from the womb of Muhurta. These demigods deliver the result of action to the living entity of their respective times. 10 and 11. The son of Sankalpa was known as Sankalpa. And from him, lust was born. The sons of Vasu were known as 8 Vasus. Just hear their names from me. Drona, Prana, Dhruva, Arka, Agni, Dosh, Vastu, Vibhavasu. From Abhimati, the wife of the Vasu named Drona, were generated the sons named Harsha, Shoka, Bhaya and so on. Text 12. Urjaswati, the wife of Prana, gave birth to three sons named Saha, Ayush, Purojav. The wife of Dhruva was known as Dharani, and from her womb various cities took birth. 30. From the womb of Vasana, the wife of Arka, came many sons headed by Tarsha, Dhara. The wife of Vasu, named Agni, gave birth to many sons headed by Dravanak. Text 14. From Kritika, another wife of Agni, came the son named Skand, Kartikeya, whose sons were headed by Vishakh. From the womb of Sharvari, the wife of the Vasu, named Dosha, came the son named Shishumar, who was an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 15. From Angirasi, the wife of the Vasu, named Vastu, was born the great architect Vishwakarma. Vishwakarma became the husband of Akriti, from whom the Manu, named Chakshusha, was born. The son of Manu was known as the Vishwadevas and Sadhyas. Usha, the wife of Vibhavasu, gave birth to three sons, Vishta, Rochisha and Atpa. From Atpa came Panchayam, the span of day, who awakens all living entities to material activities. 70. Sarupa, the wife of Bhuta, gave birth to 10 million Rudras, of whom the 11 principal Rudras were Raivat, Aj, Bhav, Bhim, Vam, Ugra, Vrikshakapi, Ajay Kapat, Ahir Vidhana, Bahurup, and Mahaniti, Mahan. Their associates, the ghosts and goblins, who are very fearful, were born of the other wife of Bhuta. 19. The Prajapati Angira had two wives named Swadha and Sati. The wife named Swadha accepted all the pitas as her sons, and Sati accepted the Atharvangiras Vedas as her son.
So basically from verse number 4 to 16, the 10 daughters which Daksha Prajapati gave to Dharma, 4 to 16, the dynasty through Dharma and the 10 daughters they were described. And then verse number 17 and 18, Daksha Prajapati gave Sarupa to a person called as Bhuta, and the sons who are born through the Bhuta, that is described. And also, like Bhuta also had another wife. The associates who were very fearful were born of the other wife of Bhuta. And the 19th verse describes the dynasty through Angira and the two wives or two daughters of Daksha Prajapati. And then further goes, 20th verse is Krishasva and his two wives. And 21 and 22 describe Kashyapa Muni. Kashyapa Muni accepted the four daughters of Daksha Prajapati. Yes.
Verse 20. Krishava had two wives named Archis and Dishana. In the wife named Archis, he begot Dhumketu, and in Dishana, he begot four sons named Vedshira, Deval, Vyuna and Manu. 21. Kashyapa, who is also named Taraksha, had four wives, Vinata, Suparna, Katru, Patangi and Yamini. Patangi gave birth to many kinds of birds, and Yamini gave birth to locusts. Vinita, Suparna, gave birth to Garuda, the courier of Lord Vishnu, and Aruna or Arun, the chariot driver of the sun god. Kadru gave birth to different varieties of serpents. 23. O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the Bharatas, the constellations named Kritrika were all wives of moon god. However, because Prajapati Daksha had caused him to suffer from a disease causing gradual destruction, the moon god could not beget children in any of his wives.
The 23rd verse described that Daksha Prajapati gave 27 daughters to moon god. So Vishnu Chakotipat says that because the moon god showed favor to Rohini constellation and ignored the others, Daksha Prajapati became angry and caused them to suffer from consumption, which weighs the body away. So therefore he did not bear children in his wives. There is a place it is described that I think in the Prabhashetra there moon god, in order to get rid of the curse, he performed austerities to please Lord Shiva. So there is a description is also there. Because moon god in one sense he became partial towards one wife and then he neglected the other wives. And Daksha Prajapati cursed him and then he went to perform austerities to please Lord Shiva. Consumption caused him to suffer from consumption which weighs the body away. Consumption, is it could be that. I'm not sure what is consumption. It could be waxing and waning, but I have to check. So another thing you can observe that in the Bhagavatam there are like the personalities who begot so many children. Daksha Prajapati begot, he really had a great capacity because he was also blessed by the Lord to produce so many children. And even some of the descendants of Daksha Prajapati, they also begot different sons and etc. So sometimes it may appear that somebody is begetting so many children, somebody is having so many wives. So it appears that they were too lusty. No, actually it's not proper to see in that manner. It is a way to see in another way, that we can see that they had a great capacity to take up responsibility. Because to raise children means it requires actually great responsibility. So the fact that they were able to handle many wives and beget many children and raise them, it shows their it shows a strong mind. It is not that they just begot children and then left them like that. They took responsibility for them. It shows their actually strength of mind. So on the other hand, in Kali Yuga, the people who many times people don't want to get married and they join the ashram, so they just want to be free. It appears that they have conquered lust, or it may appear like that, but it is actually their weak mind which tells them to actually escape the responsibilities, or they are very reluctant to take up responsibilities, because responsibility means a lot of anxiety, especially taking responsibility of children, giving them proper training, growing them, etc. It really requires a tremendous strength of mind and this thing. So the fact that people are not eager to take up the responsibility, it shows their instability, their weakness of mind.
These daughters are giving birth to varieties of children.
Mm-hmm.
It's like beyond human conception.
Uh-huh.
How they are giving birth to locusts and
birds
and
uh-huh.
serpents. How such a progeny would take place?
I don't know the exact answer, but I would say one thing is that there are many subtle laws of nature which are not, perhaps you are practically unaware of. In the Kali Yuga, we are mainly aware of certain gross laws, but there will be many subtle laws which may be prevalent. They must have been given special power, because in the beginning of creation all different species of life have to take birth in order to give facilitate the different living entities. So they must be given that power. Even to give birth to say male child or female child, it is not that we are doing, we have been given that power by the Lord. Male and female have been given that ability by the Lord. So when the Lord wants that other living entities should also take birth, so they may be given that specific power.
Everyone wants kind of exclusive attention and what kind of because oftentimes comes up, even if counselor has too many counselors or the department has too many devotees, then it will be a not paid attention. So how these ladies, what kind of mindset they had, that I mean, we hear about Chitraketu Maharaj having millions, and here also Kashyap Muni having 17, and then having multiple wives and huge number also. Krishna could expand and expand everywhere. But with others it was not the same. So what kind of mindset generally these ladies used to have in the Vedic times, which used to feel them keep satisfied, chaste, responsible, and yet not expect kind of time and attention?
The general psychology of women, that remains same in all times. As many times Prabhupada points out that point. But I think the quality becomes, I think, important. I think one devotee was saying that he said that to my wife, since I got married, now it's more than 25 years marriage, he said, I have not given a single piece of gold, and but she is happy, like that he said. So then women's nature is they want gold and ornaments, etc. That is why Prabhupada explains that the husband, the duty of a husband to provide these things. But this devotee was saying that my realization is, when you actually genuinely care for them and genuinely respect them, when you show the genuine concern, then they are satisfied. So the quality actually, he emphasized about that quality of that affection and the genuine care, because of that she was satisfied, although I did not provide a gold. So maybe in that sense I would say that, okay, whether they had the capacity to expand into so many forms, that it's not mentioned there. So maybe they genuinely took care of that whatever time they had. And also you see that the women, when they have children to take care and they are busy in that, and then the demand of the time from the husband, that goes little down. But in general, definitely the problem must be there in other, even in those times also. So Chitraketu Maharaj, it's not described that there was a demand from his wives before he got a son. So how he managed exactly, that is not sure. But sometimes it's explained that even the great kings, they also have the, they may also have mystic power to expand into different forms. That is why when Narada Muni, Jiva Goswami explains in the Sandarbhas, when Narada Muni went to Dwaraka, when he saw the 16,108 forms of Krishna, what actually surprised Narada Muni was that all these forms were Prakasha manifestations of Krishna. So Jiva Goswami says that even a yogi also has the ability to expand into many forms. So Narada Muni is not surprised by that, because he himself has that ability to expand into many forms. And other people who have the mystic power, they also have the ability to expand into many forms. So what astonished Narada Muni was that all these 16,108 forms they were not the Kaya Vyuha expansions of Krishna. There is something called as a Kaya Vyuha expansion, that which a yogi also can do by his mystic power. But these 16,108 forms were not the Kaya Vyuha expansions, they are called as the Prakasha manifestations of Krishna. So all these were exactly identical and simultaneously present in different things. They were not the technical expansions. Maybe some of these people, they had the ability by their mystic power, they could expand. Either they satisfied their wives, it's possible. Or it could be by giving them quality care, although they may not have given the equal time, same amount of time, by that they satisfied them. And by providing children, they made them busy and then they satisfied them. These are some guesses, I think.
Girl, millions of horse and girls and all girls. They must have done it somewhere, but very impossible to understand how they really took care of these kind of children. But they must have done it somewhere. Because taking care of children also, big number, sometimes they are like 20 sons, 30 sons. Or they might be over a period of time also, they may not have been like all together, different years they might have been born.
Shabari Muni expanded into 51 forms to marry the daughters of King Mandata. Next verse.
24. Thereafter the king of the moon pacified Prajapati Daksha with courteous words and thus regained the portion of the light he had lost during his disease. Nevertheless, he could not beget children. The moon loses its shining power during the dark fortnight, and the bright fortnight it manifests again. O King Parikshit, now please hear from me the names of Kashyapa's wives, from whose wombs the population of the entire universe has come. They are the mothers of almost all the population of the entire universe, and their names are very auspicious to hear. They are Aditi, Diti, Danu, Kastha, Aristha, Surasa, Ila, Muni, Krodavasha, Tamara, Surabhi, Sarma, and Timi. From the womb of Timi, all the aquatics took birth, and from the womb of Sarma, the ferocious animals like the tigers and lions took birth.
So here, Kashyapa Muni married, previously it was described that he married four daughters of Daksha, and apart from that, he also married 13 more daughters of Daksha. So it looks like totally he married 17 daughters. The descendants of Kashyapa's 13 wives are now described, taking the easier ones first in the manner of the needle and the cauldron. This is an analogy which is mentioned. Needle and the cauldron analogy is that Shuchi Kandula Nyaya first mentioned the easy things first. Yes. Shuchi Kandula Nyaya. So the point, it is basically the point, I don't know what is the easiness in that. It is just said that Shukadeva Goswami is describing the dynasty through those daughters which are actually easy to be mentioned first, and then he comes the later. Next verse.
27. My dear King Parikshit, from the womb of Surabhi, the buffalo, cow and other animals with cloven hooves took birth. From the womb of Tamara, the eagles, vultures and other large birds of prey took birth. And from the womb of Muni, the angels took birth. 28. The sons born of Krodavasha were the serpents known as then the Shuka, as well as other serpents and the mosquitoes. All the various creepers and trees were born from the womb of Ila. The Rakshasas, bad spirits, were born from the womb of Sursa. 29. The Gandharvas were born from the womb of Arishta, and animals whose hoofs are not split, such as the horse, were born from the womb of Kashta. O king, from the womb of Danu came 61 sons, of whom these 18 were very important. Dvimurdha, Shambhar, Arishta, Haigriv, Vibhavasu, Ayomukh, Sankushir, Swarbhanu, Kapil, Arun, Puloma, Vrishparva, Ekchakra, Anutapan, Durmurkesha, Virupaksha, Viprachitti, and Durjay. 32. The daughters of Swarbhanu named Surbha was married by Namuchi. The daughters of Vrishparva named Sarmishtha was given to the powerful king Yayati, the son of Nahusha. 33. Vashvanar, the sons of Danu, son of Danu, had four beautiful daughters named Upadanvi, Hayashira, Puloma, and Kalka. Hiranyaksha married Upadanvi, and Kritu married Hayashirsha. Thereafter, at the request of Lord Brahma, Prajapati Kashyapa married Puloma and Kalka, the other two daughters of Vaishvanara. From the wombs of these two wives of Kashyapa came 60,000 sons headed by Nivat Kavach, who are known as the Pulomas and the Kalkeyas. They are physically very strong and expert in fighting, and their aim was to disturb the sacrifices performed by the great sages. My dear king, when your grandfather Arjun went to the heavenly planets, he alone killed all these demons, and thus King Indra became extremely affectionate towards him. 37. In his wife Simhika, Viprachitti begot 101 sons, of whom the eldest is Rahu, and the others are the 100 Ketus. All of them attained position in influential planets. 38. Now please hear me as I describe the descendants of Aditi in chronological order. In this dynasty, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan descended by his planetary expansion. The names of the sons of Aditi are as follows: Vivaswan, Aryama, Pusha, Pushta, Savita, Bhaga, Data, Vidhata, Varuna, Mitra, Shatru, and Urukrama. 14. Samagya, the wife of Vivaswan, the sun god, gave birth to Manu named Shraddhadev, and the sun, same fortunate wife, also gave birth to the twin Yamraj and the river Yamuna. Then Yami, while wandering on the earth in the form of a mare, gave birth to Ashwini Kumaras. Chaya, another wife of sun god, begot two sons named Shanaschar and Savarni. Manu, Savarni Manu, and other daughter Tapti, who married Samvarna. From the womb of Martrika, the wife of Aryama, were born many learned scholars. Among them, Lord Brahma created the human species, which are endowed with an aptitude for self-examination. 43.
So here Prabhupada writes, the Vishnu Chakravartakur writes that from the two, Aryaman and Matrika were born sons who knew what to do and what not to do. Among some of them who were interested in pursuing spiritual life, Brahma produced the human race. Shruti says that search for Atma is manifested more in the human form. Yeah, no.
43. Pusha had no sons. When Lord Shiva was angry at Daksha, Pusha had laughed at Lord Shiva and shown his teeth. Therefore he lost his teeth, and had to live by eating only ground floor. 44. Rachna, the daughter of Daityas, became the wife of Prajapati Pushta. By his semina, he begot in her womb two very powerful sons named Sannivesha and Vishwarupa. 45. Although Vishwarupa was the son of the daughter of their eternal enemies, the demons, the demigod accepted him as their priest in accordance with the order of Brahma when they were abandoned by their spiritual master, Brihaspati, whom they had disrespected.
So now this verse becomes the seed for actually Parishit Maharaj asking a question in the next chapter. So Vishwarup, the son of the daughter of Rachana, so Vishwarup was related to both the demigods as well as the demons. So from his mother's side, he is related to the demons because his mother is Rachana. Rachana is the daughter of the Daityas. But from his father's side, he is related to the demigods. His father is Tvashta. So in that sense, this is something important to know, that will actually, because he is related to both the demigods and the demons, Tvashta has an impartial attitude towards the demigods and the demons. And that was misunderstood by Indra, and that led to actually the mistake committed by Indra. So here it's explained that when the Indra and the demigods were actually rejected by the spiritual master, then Indra accepted Vishwarupa as the spiritual spiritual master. When they were rejected by Brihaspati, they accepted Vishwarupa as the spiritual master. And this raises the question in Parishit Maharaj's heart. We'll go to the question. Shri Raja Uvacha Kasya Heto Parityakta Acharyena Atmanasura Etad Achakshva Bhagavan Shishyanam Akramam Gurau.
Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Sukhdev Goswami, "O great sage, why did the spiritual master of the demigods, Brihaspati, reject the demigods who were his own disciples? What offense did the demigod commit against the spiritual master, against their spiritual master? Please describe to me this incident."
So here, Parishad Maharaj immediately asked the question that why did Brihaspati reject the demigods? If he had rejected the demigods, then what offense did they commit? So in one sense, there is a question about the fall down of the demigods. Why were they rejected by the Brihaspati, the spiritual master? So one thing, whenever we find about certain mistakes of the great souls or the fall down, because of that they actually fell from their position, whenever such a subject matter is either spoken or heard by others, you should not be in the mood of finding fault with them. The third kind of 12th chapter, when Maitreya Rishi was describing about Lord Brahma getting attracted towards his daughter, Maitreya Rishi says that we have heard. So the fact that when he mentions that we have heard, that means that what he is indicating is that actually it should not be spoken, but in order to give knowledge, I am speaking the subject matter without finding fault with Brahma. Because if I find fault with Brahma, I would also fall down in the same manner as the sons of Marichi. That's why it is said that spot it and you got it. When you spot the fault, then you get the fault. So Maitreya Rishi, when he was speaking that fault, he was speaking not in the mood of finding fault, but he was speaking in the mood of giving knowledge without finding faults. And the same mood also should be adopted when we want to hear about the faults of others. when you want to hear about the, say, the mistakes committed by the demigods, because which led to actually being rejected by their spiritual master, Parikshit Maharaj is asking this without actually trying to find fault with Indra, the demigods. Otherwise, usually, sometimes we get actually affected by the gossip and prajalpa, and one of the dangerous type of gossip or prajalpa is that we want to actually hear about certain set of sensational stories or something, latest controversies or something, but there is an underlying mood of actually finding faults, either in hearing or sometimes in speaking also. But this we can hear, learn from Maitreya Rishi and Parikshit Maharaj. So Shukadeva Goswami starts the description. We'll recite this 2nd to 8th verse together. Shri Badarayanir Vacha Indras Tribhuvanaishwariya Madol Langita Satpataha Marubbir Vasubi Rudrair Adityai Ribhuvirnripa Vishwadevaischa Sadhyaischa Nasatyabhyan Prativarishritaha Siddhacharana Gandharvair Munibir Brahma Vadibihi Vidya Darapsarobischa Kinnarai Patagoragai Nishevyamano Bhagavan Stuyamanascha Bharata Upagiyamano Lalitam Astanadhyasanashritaha Pandurena Tapastrena Chandramandala Charuna Yuktaschanyai Paramashtyais Chamara Vyajanadibihi Virajamana Paulamya Sayada Paramacharyam Devanam Atmanaschaha Nabhyanandata Sampraptam Pratyuttanasanadibihi Vachaspatim Munimvaram Sura Suranamaskritam Nocha Chalasanadindra Pashyan Apisabhagatam.
Sukhdev Goswami said, O King, once upon a time, the King of Heaven, Indra, being extremely proud because of his great opulence of the three worlds, transgressed the law of Vedic etiquette. Seated on his throne, he was surrounded by the Maruts, Vasus, Rudras, Adityas, Rubuds, Rabuds, Vishwadevas, Sadhyas, Ashwini Kumaras, Siddhas, Charanas and Gandharvas, and by great friendly persons. Also surrounding him were the Vidyadharas, Apsaras, Kinnaras, Patagas and Uragas. All of them were offering Indra their respects and services, and the Apsaras and Gandharvas were dancing and singing with very sweet musical instruments. Over Indra's head was a white umbrella as effulgent as the moon, full moon, fanned by yak-tail whisks and served with all the paraphernalia of a great king. Indra was sitting with his wife, Sachidevi, who occupied half the throne. When the great sage Brihaspati appeared in that assembly, Brihaspati, the best of the sages, was the spiritual master of Indra and the demigods and was respected by the demigods and demons alike. Nevertheless, although Indra saw his spiritual master before him, he did not rise from his own seat or offer a seat to his spiritual master, nor did Indra offer him a respectful welcome. Indra did nothing to show him respect.
So this chapter is entitled Indra Appoints Brihaspati. Very important chapter. So this becomes like the next episode from the 7th chapter till the 13th chapter. In these 7 chapters, the story of Vritrasura is described, and then the previous life story of Vritrasura, Chitraketu Maharaj, is described from 14, 15, 16 and 17 in 4 chapters. It's a very exciting story filled with many, many wonderful lessons. especially His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj has given many wonderful classes this whole episode. I'll try to share whatever points he had mentioned apart from the Prabhupada's purpose and Vishnu Chakra Thakur. So here it is explained that Indra, he was surrounded by all these Apsaras, Siddhas, Charanas, Ashwini Kumaras, and the sages who were knowers of Brahman, and all these people were actually glorifying Indra, respecting Indra. The Apsaras were dancing, Gandharvas were singing, and different people were serving Indra. And so he was extremely wealthy, he had so many followers, he was being worshipped by others. So because of this atmosphere, he became proud. He became extremely proud. And then when Brihaspati entered that assembly, although Indra saw that Brihaspati had entered, but Indra did not welcome Brihaspati. The best of the sages, the guru of Indra and the devatas, although he was respected by the other devatas and by the demons. Brihaspati was respected by the other devatas and the demons when he arrived. All others actually respected Brihaspati by rising and offering a seat. But Indra actually, although he saw Brihaspati, he did not rise from his seat and see Brihaspati and enter the assembly. So it may appear to be like one class Maharaj explained, when we hear the title of that chapter, Indra offends Brihaspati, because one may wonder that because Srimad Bhagavatam is like the essence of the entire Vedic scriptures, the ripened fruit of the tree of the Vedic knowledge, and in that essence of the entire Vedas, if there is one chapter is entitled as Indra offends Brihaspati, and he said that one would think that maybe Indra must have committed a really great offense. He might have basically attacked Brihaspati, or he might have kicked that Brihaspati, or he might have given some he might have spoken some very sharp words towards Brihaspati. So one may think that one would think like that, but here in the case of Indra, he did not do any of these other things which you would usually think in terms of disrespect. He actually failed to get up from his seat to offer respect. So he mentioned that when somebody can do something, and when a person can do something, and if he does not do that, if something is supposed to be done, and if a person has the power to do it, but if a person does not do it, then it is also a sin. That is, in one sense, we can say the sin of omission, we can say. You can do something, but when you don't do, then it is considered a sin. So Brihaspati knows exactly what is going to take place. Indra, definitely, he saw Brihaspati and he could have actually, he could have got up to actually welcome Brihaspati, but he failed to show respect. So therefore, that becomes the, that one act that starts the whole series of events. And here we find sometimes one may wonder that not getting up, how great it was with offense. There is a verse in the Mahabharata which says that Urdvam pranat utkramanti yunas tavira agate pratyuttana bi avivada abhyam punastan pratipadyata. When elders approach, the life years of young people move upwards out of the body. And when the young people stand up to show respect towards the elders, then the life years return to the body. So that means by not getting up to show respect to the elders, the lifespan of the those who actually don't show this respect, that gets reduced. So it is actually that sense, these are actually subtle laws of nature. So many times people are not aware of the different subtleties of the laws of nature. I attended the National Conference on Cows. So in that there was one scientist. He works with he is from a Cambridge University, and he was working in the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, I think, in the university. So he spoke very briefly. He said that the 45 years of research, the conclusion of my 45 years of research is that subtle affects the grass. There are many subtle laws, subtle things which affect the grass. That means all these things, for example, say yoga, chanting of the mantras, or the pranayam, many other spiritual processes, they act in a subtle level, and what we do in a subtle level, it actually affects the grass. So he said, this is the result of my conclusion of my 45 years of research. But the material scientists, what they actually, their idea is that they are only seeing everything in terms of the grass platform. They are not able to see the connection between the subtle and the grass. So the Vedic culture, you work on the subtle, and then that makes a difference in the grass platform. The samskaras are performed in a subtle level. You work on the consciousness, that makes a difference in a grass level, in terms of children who take birth. So Prabhupada also mentions in different places. For example, he says that the laws of nature are very subtle. For example, if one eats in a place which is very sinful, he shares in the resultant reaction of the sinful activities performed there. So in the Vedic system, therefore, for a householder to call Brahmanas and Vaishnavas to eat at ceremonial performances in his house, because the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas can immunize him from sinful activities. So that is why they would call. But it is not the duty of a rigid Vaishnavas and Brahmanas to freely accept prasadam invitations everywhere. So that is why it is said, like, even eating at the restaurants, you may not understand the how it, because this, on a subtle level, the vibrations of people who are actually eating there or who have eaten there. But generally, people who come to eat restaurants, there is an enjoyment propensity is there. So when you go to eat in the same place, even for, it could be Govindas or something, whatever it is, but it actually affects in a subtle level, unless the person is strong. So that is why even the principle of Sahabhojan means, like, with whom you eat together. Like, one is what to speak of cooking the food cooked by, say, devotees, food cooked by non-devotees, that is one thing. But even the principle of Sahabhojan, that is what in that the conversation between Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu. Advaita Acharya was saying that I don't know from which caste you come from, I don't know your birth. I think by eating with you, I don't know how I'm going to get contaminated. And Nityananda Prabhu, he speaks that, you are Advaita. I am fearing that by eating along with you, my mind will get contaminated by the Mayavad philosophy. So actually, Prabhupada, Kaviraj Goswami says that they were actually glorifying each other by using Vyajastuti. It was actually a joking conversation taking place between Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu. Apparently they were criticizing, but actually they were glorifying each other using Vyajastuti. But Prabhupada also gives a practical lesson for us, that he talks about the principle of Sahabhojan, that when you eat actually together with people who have a certain mentality, certain attitude, you get affected by their actually the vibration. So these are, I'm just mentioning this for the point of the subtle nature of the laws. The laws of nature are very subtle. One may wonder, like, what is the what is something great if a person does not get up? But there are subtle laws which most people are not aware. Even as I mentioned, even the scientists recognize this point. So yeah, we will go to the next verse. Anybody had any point? Tato nirgatya sahasa kavir angirasa prabhu ayayau swagraham tushni vidvan shrimada vikriyam.
Brihaspati knew everything that would happen in the future. Seeing Indra's transgression of etiquette, he completely understood that Indra was puffed up by his material opulence. Although able to curse Indra, he did not do so. Instead, he left the assembly and in silence returned to his home.
So here we see this chapter is essentially the main theme is actually disrespect. So especially in the modern culture, it is considered to be a fact. That is considered like a fashion. Disrespecting a person is considered as a fashion. And whereas the Vedic culture, it is actually based on respect. So in the case of Indra, because he was being respected by others, he got carried away by that respect. So this also is a very important this one. When you are surrounded by people who are just glorifying you, who are just maybe flattering you or something, and if a person is not conscious, if he gets surrounded by them, if he gets carried away by them, then he ends up committing some mistake. So even in the case of Paundraka also, Paundraka was not only he had the attitude, he wanted to imitate Krishna, he wanted to actually kill Krishna, etc. But he was also surrounded by people who were flattering him that you are none other than Vasudev. And he also got carried away by them. So that is why great devotees, they don't get carried away by their followers. They also spend quality time with people, with their equals who will actually correct them, who are the genuine well-wishers. When you are being respected by others, there is a definitely possibility to get carried away by that respect. So therefore we have to always remember that this person is respecting me for the super soul present in me. So the person who is accepting the respect and the person who is giving respect, both should be aware of the super soul present in them. The person who is accepting the respect, he should understand that actually they are respecting me for the super soul present in me. And the person who are giving the respect also, they should give the respect in connection with the super soul. Otherwise, both of them actually fall down. And also, we can see in another level, like for example, if a cashier, he is collecting so much of Lakshmi from the customers. But if a person thinks that, oh, this, because these people are giving Lakshmi to me, therefore let me take the money to my home. No, he is supposed to collect the money on behalf of the bank. So similarly, we are supposed to accept the respect on behalf of the Guru Parampara, on behalf of the spiritual master and the Guru Parampara. But when we accept the respect, when we forget that, when we accept it on our own, then the cashier will get arrested. Similarly, then that leads to fall down. Another example, in the Bhakti Ratnakar. Huh. Yeah, in connection with the super soul. When you connect the, when you in connection with the, like when you, the super soul, when we see that, when we show that respect, independent of the connection with the super soul, then it becomes like a flattery. When you respect the person, understanding his connection with the super soul, oh, because he is devoted to the Lord, so therefore the Lord is empowering him. Because he is sincere, so therefore the spiritual master is empowering him. So in that connection you respect that person.
Because his own desire, his own desire, which is aligning with the desires of the Lord, that will become same as purification, or it distincts? The two are different things.
His own desires aligning with the super soul.
Yeah. That will be same as considering himself as a part and parcel of Lord, and his following instruction of the Lord. The two are different thing, or it means same?
Yeah, one is that every living entity is a part and parcel of Krishna. In that sense we show respect to everyone. That's why the Swayambhu Muni is telling to Dhruva Maharaj that if you are actually you are a devotee of Krishna, if you claim yourself to be a devotee of Krishna, you should understand the presence of the super soul in everyone's heart. So if you know the presence of the super soul in everyone's heart, how can you have enmity towards anybody? So that is, in general we show respect to everyone, but in the case of a devotee, the fact that he has surrendered to Krishna, he has been empowered by Krishna, we offer that extra respect also. But the respect is in connection with the super soul, the supreme Lord, spiritual master. But when we in this episode, in terms of accepting the respect, we are supposed to accept the respect on behalf of the Guru Parampara. When we forget that connection, then we get carried away by the flatterers. And on the other hand, we find other examples how Prithu Maharaj, when he was being glorified by the Suta, Magadha and Vandi, how he did not get carried away. Brahmaji, when he was being glorified by Narada Muni. So all these are other examples. So in the Bhakti Ratnakar it is explained, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they were opulent like Indra. But whenever somebody would enter that assembly, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami respected any common person who entered that assembly with great, actually, with great feelings and concern, with genuine respect, they would actually touch their hearts. So this is a like contrast, like Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they were also opulent like Indra, but how they respected others. But Indra failed to show respect. And it is not disrespecting a person, it is also which person whom you disrespect, depending on that the reaction also the reaction also varies. Here the Indra is disrespecting his spiritual master, although he disrespected only for a short period, short moment, later he realized that mistake, but still the reaction was great. So that is also, that is why when an airplane, when it actually deviates from the angle even slightly, but instead of landing up in one country, it may land up in some other country only. So when a great person disrespects another great soul, when a great person commits a mistake, even for a short moment, then the reaction can be to a very very great degree. That is why there is one person, one scholar, he mentioned that don't tell me about the greatness of great people, which everybody can talk about. Please tell me about the faults of the great people, or the mistakes committed by the great people. Not in the sense of fault finding. Please tell me about the mistakes of the great people, because the mistakes of the great people, it actually creates a greater impact on the larger number of society, etc. So, that's why Srimad Bhagavatam, in the other scriptures, they may talk about glorification of all these demigods. Even in the Mahabharata, when it talks about Vritrasura episode, it makes apparently Indra as a hero and Vritrasura is not made as a hero in Mahabharata. Indra is considered as a winner. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, it actually goes to the heart. It actually, even those great people who are actually apparently great, the devatas who are considered great in the eyes of the common people, some of their mistakes are highlighted, how, because it actually made a great impact on the whole heavenly planets. All of them actually lost their opulences. So now in the 9th verse it is explained, Tato Nirgatya Sahasa Kavir Angirasa Prabhu. So Brihaspati is described by three words, Kavi, Prabhu and Vidwan. Kavi means Brihaspati knew the future, and Prabhu, that means he was actually capable of giving punishment, but he did not give punishment, he just completely disappeared. And Vidwan, that means he knew the cause of Indra's disrespect. So it is not simply the act of not getting up, it is the attitude behind that act. The attitude behind that act, the cause of that act is that the pride which arose from the opulences. So that is what it means, that Vidwan, he knew the cause of Indra's disrespect. So in our Brahmachari Yatra, I think, anybody came for Brahmachari Yatra? Sringeri? Yeah, who was? I think Gaurgopal Dhruv was. He mentioned in some other place or something. Yeah, usually we tell this point that how usually we get lot of respect, we get the actually confidence, we are able to influence people because of our connection with Srila Prabhupada's movement, because of our connection with Bishri Radha Gopina temple or Vrindavan Chandra temple, because of our connection with the spiritual master. But many times we fail to actually, for a period of time, sometimes we fail to remember that connection, that the influence we are able to, how we are able to influence people, it is because of the connection. Just like that, the snake on the head of Lord Shiva, he started actually hissing at Garuda. Actually, Garuda is such a powerful servant of the Supreme Lord, but the snake had the audacity to hiss at Garuda. So because it is actually it is residing in the neck of Lord Shiva. So sometimes that connection can make us proud, and then we can actually try to disrespect other people, and we may fail to recognize actually our insignificant position. So that is why in the scriptures always mention two kinds of statements. They talk about the greatness of the Supreme Lord, and they also talk about the insignificant nature of a living entity. So you will find similar kind of verses, like for example in the second canto, 7th chapter, and Brahmaji, after describing the incarnations of the Lord, he tells that how the qualities of the Lord are unlimited. Even if somebody manages to count the number of dust particles, one cannot count the qualities of the Supreme Lord, which are unlimited in number. Ananta Sesh has not come to an end, by describing the qualities of the Lord since time immemorial, it is thousands of years. And there are also verses in the other side. I read a verse in the Isopanishad commentary. It is explained that one may manage to count the number of dust particles on the earth. One may manage to count the number of snow particles, etc. But one will not be able to, even if a person manages to count all these things, but one will not be able to manage the number of Brahmas who have taken birth since time immemorial. So that means even the position of Brahma is something so insignificant. There are countless Brahmas. Brahma is considered to be the person who is having the longest lifespan. Even in that different universes, different Brahmas have different, the lifespan is higher. In this universe, Brahma has the shortest lifespan. But even the even if you manage to count these number of dust particles, one will not be able to count the number of Brahmas. So this shows the insignificant position of a living entity. And exactly same analogy is used by Brahmaji himself to highlight the unlimited nature of the Lord's qualities. The second canto, 7th chapter, and also in the Brahmaji's praise in the 14th chapter. So therefore, these two things, to the extent we become more and more conscious of these two things, so then a person does not become proud. But Indra here, he got carried away by the different respect.
In another incident, we find the moon god steals the wife of Brihaspati,
yes.
Tara, that time.
Mm.
So, was he also given some, some reaction of the, is the offense, right? So, was there any reaction for that big offense?
Moon god,
In fact, the sun goes to moon god only, the Buddha.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Some reaction will come, since the reaction comes, reaction is given to different people in a different ways actually. At least Bhagavatam does not describe exactly what reaction he got. But it's, usually reactions people get definitely. But these stories are mentioned to highlight. It's, when the demigods commit mistakes, they commit very rarely mistakes, but they are presented to highlight the, in order to warn us about the danger of those anarthas. Sometimes people of the other religions, Abrahamic scriptures, they actually highlight these stories of the demigods, how Brahmaji ran after his daughter, Indra was slow lusty. But the point is that in these personalities they may have counted a mistake, but they have performed enormous service. In their long lifespan they might have committed maybe 3 or 4 mistakes or 5 or 6 mistakes. So you have to judge the character of a person by his overall character, how they were overall consistent to the principles of Dharma. Yeah, there could be some Karma Mishra Bhaktas etc., but how they overall consistent engage the service of the Lord. But sometimes they commit mistakes. So when that is why a real critic is somebody who actually proportionately highlights the fault and proportionately highlights the mistake, proportionately glorifies the right thing. But the modern critics, they disproportionately speak about the faults and the good things. I read a beautiful article of Govind Prabhu, Vyasadev, the greatest school of critic. Vyasadev, when he presented the Mahabharata, he has presented in the what proportion it should be highlighted, in that proportion he has mentioned about the even the faults of the good persons and also some good qualities or good activities performed by the wrong people. So that requires how much exactly in proportionately highlight that, that requires maturity, real unbiased nature. So we'll just take a short break, then we'll continue. Swayam Atmana Matmana. So we can see Indra actually realized his mistakes and he condemned himself in the presence of all the assembly. It is also described, I am not remembering where, but Chaitanya Charitamrita in one purport it is explained. When a person admits one mistakes in the assembly of the Vaishnavas, then one gets the actually one gets the power to actually transcend those mistakes. One gets the blessings of the Vaishnavas to come out of that, to transcend the mistakes and to further go ahead in this process. Anybody remembers where it is mentioned, Chaitanya Charitam? Because it is extremely difficult to admit one mistake in the presence of everyone. So he said directly, go on the false ego. But it's Indra actually condemned himself in the presence of all the members of the assembly. So Pratibuddhya means he recovered from his intoxication into with wealth, and then he perceived that he had committed an offense to Guru. So now Indra speaks the next verses. 11th to 15th are the words spoken by the repentance of Indra. Aho bata maya sadhu kritam vai dabra buddhina yam mayaishwarya mattena guru sadasi katkrita.
Alas, what a regrettable deed I have committed because of my lack of intelligence and my pride in my material opulences. I failed to show respect to my spiritual master when he entered this assembly, and thus I have insulted him.
Aho bata maya asadhu. What an improper deed I have kritam, I have committed because of adabra buddhina, because of my lack of intelligence. Yen mayai aishwarya mattena, because of my pride in my wealth, what I have done? Guru sadasi katkrita. Guru sadasi katkrita means mistreated or insulted. I have insulted my guru sadasi when he entered the assembly or in the assembly in front of everyone. Next verse.
Ko grudye pandito lakshmi tripishtapapate rapi yayakam asuram bhavam nitodya vibhudeshwarah. Although I am king of the demigods who are situated in the mode of goodness, I was proud of a little opulence and polluted by false ego. Under the circumstances, who in this world would accept such riches at the risk of falling down? Alas, I condemn my wealth and opulence.
So, ko gridyet pandito lakshmi. Gridyet means accept or desire. Pandita, which learned person, ka pandita, which learned person, gridyet would desire the wealth, lakshmi, tripishtapa pate rapi. We desire the wealth of the King of Heaven. Tripishtapa Patir means it refers to the King of Heaven. We desire the wealth of the Indra. Yayaham Asuram Bhavam. Because of that wealth, I displayed the mood of a demon. Nitodhya Vibhudeshwara. I am the master of the devatas. But
I actually fallen down to the position of a demon. So here we can see that Prabhupada says that for the quotes first, Nadanam Najanam Sundari Kavitam Va Jagadisha Kamaye. Our devotee does not desire wealth, followers or the beautiful women. And according to the laws of nature, when one is extremely opulent, one becomes degraded, and this is true both individually and collectively. So that means, in the sense, when a person commits a mistake, individually he degrades, and it also affects collectively the entire community also. It's like the same principle with respect to when a person advances in bhakti, even those who are connected to him, they also advance. When a person commits a mistake, actually other people, Indra would say that other people, they did not correct me. They did not remind me that I should actually get up and respect Brihaspati. So they also got implicated in his mistake. They also got the reaction. Like when there is a, when Putana came to Vrindavan, and then when Putana was killed by Krishna, she assumed a huge form, and then when she fell down, all the trees in a distance of 7 or 8 kilometers, they also fell down. So when a great leader falls down, when a great leader commits a mistake, when he falls down, it affects even the followers. Unless the followers are very strong, even the followers' faith also gets shaken, and then they also, many times there are instances in ISKCON that sometimes and very powerful leaders, when they fell down, in overnight the whole temple became empty. Practically most of the temple became empty, and the followers also lost their faith in the process. Yayaham asuram bhavam nitodhi ubudesh. That's why Prabhupada says that it affects both individually, it is true both individually and collectively. The demigods are situated in the mode of goodness, but when a person becomes attached to the mode of goodness, that attachment to sattva guna degrades a person to passion and ignorance. That is why Krishna explains that that verse in the 14th chapter. Tatra sattvam nirmalatva prakashakam anamayam sukha sangena badnati jnana sangena chanaga. Krishna addresses Arjuna by the word anaga by saying that you are sinless. The symptoms of sattva guna are happiness and knowledge, but do not become attached to the mode of goodness, because that will degrade you to the lower modes. Prabhupada gives the example of USA. In American society, they try to advance in material opulence without trying to produce ideal human beings. The result is that Americans are now regretting the wholesale criminality of American society and are wondering how America has become so lawless and unmanageable. So the men produced in such a society are less than fourth class. Means where they only paid attention to some material advancement, and they did not pay attention to some providing human beings with good character. And the result of material opulence without aiming for one's self-interest, nathe vita swartha gatim hi vishnum, is that the result of that is that there is a society of Varna Sankara. And then the last paragraph, Prabhupada gives a solution. He mentions as a solution, one should take advice from the spiritual master. And secondly, one should take to Krishna consciousness. And thirdly, he says, divide the society into four classes and then create first class men. These are the four points as a solution Prabhupada gives. Yaha parameshtyam dishanam adityashtanna kanchana pratyutte pratyutishtet iti bruyur dharmam tena param viduhu
a person says, one who is situated on the exalted throne of a king should not stand up to show respect to another king or a brahmana, it is to be understood that he does not know the superior religion principles.
So here, somebody may argue by saying that, by quoting from Niti Shastra, the king on the throne should not rise for anybody. But Indra is actually saying that actually such people do not know the highest dharma. That one who says that a king may not get up, such people do not know the highest dharma of respecting the guru. So therefore there are higher dharmas and lower dharmas. One should be aware of these things. Especially person sitting on Lord Brahma's throne should also rise when superiors come. So the example of when Sudama approached, how Krishna showed respect to Sudama by immediately getting up. Another example is that when Narada Muni came to Dwaraka, how Krishna showed respect to Narada Muni. Prithu Maharaj, when the four Kumaras appeared, Prithu Maharaj was giving instructions to the citizens. The previous chapter, 21st chapter, has instructions to the citizens. And then when he was giving instructions, then at that time the four Kumaras appeared. The Prithu Maharaj spontaneously got up from his seat, just like a conditioned soul would be spontaneously attracted towards the sense objects. So he did not get carried away by the vibrations of giving instructions to others. He actually showed respect to the four Kumaras. That is another example. And then Prabhupada talks about how the technological advancement is not actually human civilization. The advanced civilization is that civilization which follows the Varnashram system. In the Varnashram system, a Brahmana and a Sannyasi, they are respected by others. So that is what he is highlighting here. That is what the advanced civilization, where the society concerned, where those who are advanced in spiritual life, they are respected. A society without the Vedic laws and regulations will not be very helpful to humanity. The society does not know the aim of life and the highest principles of religion. Tesham kupata destrunam patatam tamasikhyadaha ye shaddadyurvachastevai Majyantyashmaplavayiva.
Leaders who have fallen into ignorance and who mislead people by directing them to the path of destruction, as described in the previous verse, are in effect boarding a stone boat, and so too are those who blindly follow them. A stone boat would be unable to float and would sink in the water with its passengers. Similarly, those who mislead people to go to hell and their followers go with them.
The previous verse, Indra said that not only a king should get up when the guru comes, even the person who is sitting on the throne of Lord Brahma, even Lord Brahma should also rise. This is the highest principles of religion. And in this verse he says, is actually condemning those followers or those people who did not remind him not to get up. He is showing his anger towards those who gave instructions to him in his assembly, oh, you don't have to get up. He is condemning them. He says that just like a person in a stone boat sink along with the stone boat, so the followers sink with the bad instructors. Blind leading the blind. Tesham kupata deshrinam patatam tamasikhyadaha. Ye shaddadyur, those who put faith, vacha, in the words of fallen souls, kupata deshrinam, who point out the patatam tamasi, the wrong path, where do they go? Majyanti ashmaplavayivade. They also patatam tamasikhyadaha, they also sink down like persons riding in a boat made of stone. So here
the following blind leaders are fallen persons is like boarding a stone boat. So Prabhupada talks about the purpose of human life. When the human life is directed by a spiritual master acting as a captain, the boat can very easily cross the ocean. So, like, there is a beautiful story which is explained. Once there was a fire in a building, so all the army soldiers and their captain, they went to save the people in the building. So when they went to different floors and then they saved different people, and then they came to the top of the floor, and then after saving the different people, they started jumping from the top floor. So in the ground floor, there were other soldiers who were standing with a net, and then each soldier from the top, from the terrace, they were actually jumping into the net, because the whole building is on fire, fire that nobody can actually come down to the staircase or the lift. So then they started jumping down, and then all the soldiers, they actually jumped down, and then they actually jumped into the net. And finally, that army chief, he became ready to jump from there. When he became ready to jump, so these four people who were holding the net, they left the net to offer salute to the army chief. So then the army chief actually fell down. So the point is that here the followers, by respecting, they caused maybe the injury to their leader. So similarly here, Indra is actually condemning them that because you people did not remind me that I have forgotten because of my pride, but at least you should have reminded me. But you continue to flatter me, you continue to say that, oh, you don't have to get up. And he is showing anger towards them, whom he is comparing to be the blind leaders or the instructors who are actually guiding him. So here there is another beautiful point in Prabhupada's purport in the second paragraph. So Prabhupada talks about the false leaders who are actually our role models. Especially in the current humanity, people have the many false leaders in the form of the cricket stars or the Bollywood stars. The first, we have to give up the false leaders, because Indra was advised by certain false leaders. And then he says, and one should take instructions from Krishna, and Krishna has mentioned that Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja, and give up all other process of religion, simply surrender into me. And then Prabhupada mentions a beautiful point. Even if one does not accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but his instructions are so exalted and beneficial for humanity that if one follows his instructions, one will be saved. So this is a beautiful point. Even if somebody does not accept Krishna as the Supreme Lord, but somehow if they follow the instructions of Krishna, then also one will be saved. And they will gradually come to the point of accepting Krishna the Supreme Lord. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentioned the similar point in regards to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If some people do not accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the incarnation of Krishna, he is non-different from Krishna. But still, if you somehow induce them to follow the process given by Lord Chaitanya, we don't have to force them. We don't have to forcefully preach to them, oh no, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself who has come in the mood of a devotee. But somehow inspire them to take up the process given by Lord Chaitanya. Means like connect them to the Harinam Sankirtan. When they take the process given by Lord Chaitanya, by practicing that process, they will be able to experience the result of that process, and they will be inspired from within to accept Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Lord. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I think, mentions in the Krishna Samhita, I guess. Similar point Prabhupada is saying, even if somebody doesn't accept Krishna as a Supreme Lord, but you present the teachings of Krishna. and people start, if they start accepting the teachings of Krishna, then they will slowly get benefited, they will slowly get changed, and then they will come to the point of accepting Krishna's supremacy. So here, and then Prabhupada talks about how the American society patronized the makers of stone boats. They glorify those who make the stone boats, that means like they actually glorify all these false leaders. And then finally Prabhupada explains that political, if a society is guided by political diplomacy, with one nation maneuvering against another, it will certainly sink like a stone boat. So political maneuvering and diplomacy will not save the human society. So people must take to Krishna consciousness and to understand the aim of life, to understand God and to fulfill the human mission. Atasam amaracharyam agada dishanam dvijam prasadayishye nishata shirshnatacharanam sprishan.
King Indra said, "Therefore with great frankness and without duplicity, I shall now bow my head at the lotus feet of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods. Because he is in the mood of goodness, he is fully aware of all knowledge and is the best of the brahmanas. Now I shall touch his lotus feet and offer my obeisances unto him to try to satisfy him."
Yeah, there's one more point in regards to the 12th verse. So in the 12th verse, Indra said that because of my pride due to wealth, I acquired the asura bhava. So in one class, Radhanath Maharaj explained that there are two qualities which actually transform, but in exactly opposite manner. The most transformative qualities are pride and humility. So pride transforms something spiritual into material, and humility can transform material into spiritual. The pride actually degrades a person, humility elevates a person. In the case of here, the demigods, they were situated in sattva guna, but that pride actually made Indra into a demon. So he said, he is saying that I acted like a demon. So here, coming to this verse, 15th verse, evam atasam amaracharyam. So therefore he comes to the conclusion, therefore I shall please the guru of the devata, samara acharya, agada dishanam dujam, who possesses deep knowledge. How shall I please him? Prasada yeshe nishata sirshna tat charanam sprishan, by touching my head to his feet with sincerity. The solution for disrespect is that you actually show respect properly. So therefore he is saying that let me please the guru by respecting him properly, by offering proper dandavat. So that's why Prabhupada is quoting Yasya Prasadat Bhagavat Prasada Yasya Prasada Nagati Ghutopi. A disciple should never be hypocrite or unfaithful to the guru. Krishna says that acharyam mam vijaniyam nava manyeta karichit. One should never consider the acharya to be an ordinary person. So there are two faults which a living entity commits. One is that overestimating, and another is underestimating. The scriptures talk about underestimating Achye, Gurushu, Naramati, Vaishnave, Jati, Buddhi, considering a Vaishnava to be considering Vaishnava based on his birth, considering a guru to be an ordinary person, considering a deity to be made of stone, is called as a hellish mentality. It's complete underestimation. Another fault is that overestimation. Overestimation is that when a person is at a particular level, when you glorify or respect a person more than his level, that is also a fault. And people actually start, when some of the people who started calling Prabhupada, Prabhupada is non-different from Krishna. So when they said like that, Prabhupada made a statement. He said that the only thing which is worse than underestimating a guru is overestimating a guru. So in that sense, overestimating a guru, in the sense equating with Krishna in all respects, that is also a fault. But here the Indra is saying, because I underestimated Brihaspati for some time, let me actually respect him properly. So next verse is an important verse. Evam chintayatastasya magono bhagavan grihat Brihaspatir gato drishta gatim adhyatma mayaya.
While Indra, the king of demigods, thought in this way and repented in his own assembly, Brihaspati, the most powerful spiritual master, understood his mind. Thus he became invisible to the Indra and left home, for Brihaspati was spiritually more powerful than King Indra.
Yes. Hypocrite. Yeah, in the sense, should never be a hypocrite. Hypocrite means being a duplicitous, keeping something within one's mind, but then externally acting in a different way. That means one should be frank with the spiritual master. One should not try to cheat the spiritual master by hiding one's certain frailties or ulterior motives. Just like Dhruva Maharaj honestly expressed himself to Narada Muni. Although he had a material motivation, but he openly said that if you can tell me some method to satisfy my material desires, you please tell me something, otherwise I'll go ahead. And please tell me a honest method by which I can obtain, I can fulfill my desire. So Dhruva Maharaj, even Kardama Muni exhibited that honesty to the Supreme Lord by asking for a suitable wife. So that's what it means, not being hypocrite. Yeah, that is one thing, but this is like about certain hidden motivation. So that one should not try to cheat, but this is somebody, when you don't feel like doing something, but still you actually act enthusiastically. I mean, don't act based on your feelings, but you try to show enthusiasm, and by that, while being aware that actually I don't have the taste, but still let me act enthusiastically in order to attract the mercy of the Lord. Sense. That is not a hypocrisy in the sense that it's not hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is with respect to some hiding, some hidden motivations. Well, acting enthusiastically, a person is aware that I don't have the higher taste, and he may also admit that okay, we also admit I don't feel like that, but still I have to let me act enthusiastically. You'll admit that. So the 16th verse, this is an important verse. When Indra was thinking in this way, evam chintayatastasya magono bhagavan gruhat. The magono, Bhagavan here refers to when Indra, the most powerful, was thinking in this way, Brihaspati, disregarding this, Brihaspati gato drishtam, left his house and disappeared by his great power. Gatim adhyatma mayaya. So here, although Indra genuinely repented, but Brihaspati became invisible by his great power. Indra actually wants to, Indra comes in search of Brihaspati in order to offer respects to Brihaspati. Because he knew that when we actually offend a spiritual master, the spiritual master leaves us, then the demons will take advantage of it and then they will easily defeat us. He knows that actually. And he comes to offer respects, but Brihaspati becomes invisible and he does not give an opportunity to Indra to accept, to offer respects to him. So, well, this point is not highlighted here in the purport, but Radha Govind Maharaj explains this in regards to another verse in the Bhagavatam. In the 8th canto, 8th chapter, when Lakshmi Devi appears from the Samudra Manthan, she is examining different groups of personalities present over there and she wants to choose a suitable husband. And then she is seeing different groups of personalities, so these people have this quality, but then they are having this fault, and then one by one they are rejecting, she is rejecting different people before finally accepting Vishnu as the Supreme Lord. So one of the group of the personalities which she rejects is that, she says, Jnanam kvachit tachana sangha varjitam. When she is mentioning different groups of personalities, she is having different persons in the mind. Which Sridhar Swami gives examples. So for this example, she says, Jnanam kvachit. Some people are highly knowledgeable, but tachana sangha varjitam, but they are not freed from material attachments. They are not freed from material desires. So when she is speaking this verse, the people whom she has in mind, which is pointed out by Sridhar Swami in his commentary, is that the people like Shukracharya and Brihaspati. Shukracharya and Brihaspati, they are the spiritual masters, the demons and the demigods. They are highly knowledgeable. Jnanam kvachit, but tacha na sangha varjitam. They are not freed from the material attachments. So in the case of Brihaspati, what was his material attachment? So it is explained, this episode is given as an example. Brihaspati, although he was knowledgeable, sometimes one may have the knowledge, but still one may desire to be respected. So Brihaspati, he also had the desire to be respected. So that means he had the attachment for respect. And therefore he became invisible, he felt offended. So one is Indra offending Brihaspati, another is that other person feeling offended, that means, oh, this person did not respect me. I think Radheshyam Prabhu also often quotes that. Gaur Krishna Goswami Maharaj, some devotee says that, oh, this person does not respect me, how do we deal with that? So he would answer, I feel the problem is more with the senior devotee who is complaining that, oh, this person is not respecting me, than with the other person who is not showing the respect. So in that sense, there is an element of mistake from the point of Brihaspati, which shows his material attachment for getting respected. So which is pointed out in that particular section, that particular verse in the 8th canto. So Indra, because he overestimated himself to be a great person, he underestimated Brihaspati and did not respect him. So when a person considers oneself to be great, then when a great person comes, you fail to recognize his greatness, you underestimate him. So therefore one has to understand what is one's real position, I am insignificant, so that we can actually respect the others. Gurur Nadigatas Samyam Parikshan Bhagavan Swarat Dhyayandiya Surairyukta Sharma Nalabhatatmanah.
Although Indra searched vigorously with the assistance of other demigods, he could not find Brihaspati. Then Indra thought, alas, my spiritual master has become dissatisfied with me. and now I have no means of achieving good fortune. Although Indra was surrounded by demigods, he could not find peace of mind.
So Indra searched intensely, but he couldn't find Brihaspati. He could not sharma dhyayan diya surair yukta sharma nalaba tatmanaha. He could not find peace of mind because of his unsuccessful attempt to search for Brihaspati. So when the demons come to know that the demigods are without their spiritual master, so immediately they attack the devatas. They equip themselves with the weapons and declare war against the devatas. So then they easily defeat all the devatas. It's described that when the devatas' heads, thighs and arms and other parts of their bodies were injured with the sharp arrows of the demons, the devatas, they leave their abode and then approach Lord Brahma with bowed heads. So Radhanath Maharaj explains in a class that when you commit an offense, you lose the result of the offense is that you lose the service to the Krishna. The demigods committed an offense to Brihaspati, and their service is that the service to the Lord is to be in that particular post and perform the responsibilities of that post. That is the service to the Lord. But after offending Brihaspati, they were defeated by the demons and they lost their service. And if the offense is more severe, you lose the propensity to serve also. So in this case of Indra, at least he realized the offense. He realized the offense immediately. So therefore he just lost the service, but he didn't lose the propensity to serve. Because he had to actually get back the heavenly kingdom in order to serve the Supreme Lord. That's why they approach Lord Brahma with the bowed heads. And another point which Maharaj explains is that if the Lord is pleased with a person, that person will get the reactions of his offense immediately. So Indra offended Brihaspati and immediately he got the reactions. Immediately he was defeated by the demons and he got the reactions. So the more you actually the reactions get delayed, that means it is going to come with the interest. So when you don't repay the loan immediately, then you have to pay with a greater interest actually. So therefore in one class, in the Bhagavatam class, he explained that if the devotee who has committed an offense, if he is not getting the reaction immediately, that means that the Lord is so disgusted with him that this person is going to get greater reaction later with interest. Next verse. Now Brahmaji speaks to the demigods.
Tamstatabhyardhitan vikshya
Bhagavan Atma Bhurajah Kripaya Paraya Deva Vuvacha Parisantvayan.
The demigods coming towards him, their bodies gravely injured by the arrows of the demons. He pacified them by his great causeless mercy and spoke as follows.
Yeah, this one more point which we failed to mention. If we compare Indra's episode versus Brahma's episode, so Indra, because of his intoxication due to pride, he did not get up when Brihaspati entered the assembly. And the other followers of Indra, they did not remind Indra, "Oh, you are falling down, you are not showing respect." In fact, they told him that, "Oh, you don't have to get up because you are a king." But in the case of Brahmaji's episode, when Brahmaji was running after his daughters, at least the other followers, they actually respectfully reminded Brahmaji. The third canto, that the sons of Brahmaji, they spoke 3-4 verses.
that you are actually the leader of the entire society, all the human beings. If you do like that, it will be a great, people will also follow in your footsteps. They try to actually remain Brahmaji. So it's also important as a follower, we also have to protect the sense, the leaders. Of course, I am not saying that some leaders will also, from the point, I am not saying the spiritual master or something, but yeah, sometimes spiritual masters are also at different levels in the sense, or our guides or siksha gurus are different people. Because anybody can actually sometime, or you know, our fellow god brothers or something, one gets, they also sometimes come under a certain anarthas. But we need to, in the sense, respectfully, just like in the case of the Brahmaji and their sons, they try to respectfully remain the Brahmaji. It is not that they try to boss over Brahma, they try to instruct Brahma or something. But sometimes when people have the, when there are blind followers, they see that whatever my superior or guru does, it is all the leela, and then they don't actually, they fail to do something. So if you read carefully the verses in the 3rd canto, 12th chapter, those sons of Brahma, with great respect, they try to address Brahma, they try to help him come out of the situation. Because sometimes doctors also, they also get disease, isn't it? Unless somebody is a Uttamadhikari, Mahabhagavat, so they don't get succumb to that. But otherwise, sometimes the guides or the spiritual masters, the siksha gurus, they are also at different levels, they are also sadhakas. Sometimes they also come under the different this one. But as followers, instead of making a blind eye to them, either we report to somebody who can help them, or sometimes we may also have to help them with a great respect. So that was not shown by the sense of Indra's followers. And here Brahmaji, he pacified them by his causeless mercy and spoke as follows. So it is said, preaching means what? Preaching means comfort the afflicted and afflict the comforted. So those who are completely attached to their comfort zone, you need to little shake them up from there. And some people who are very much afflicted, you need to actually comfort them, and then need to help them come out of the situation. But sometimes what happens that yeah, we will see the next verse what Brahmaji speaks. Shri Brahma Vacha Aho Bhatasura Sreshta Hyabhadram Vakratam Mahat Brahmishtam Brahmanam Dantam Aishwaryan Nabhyanandata.
Lord Brahma said, O best of the demigods, unfortunately, because of madness resulting from your material opulence, you failed to receive Brihaspati properly when he came to your assembly. Because he is aware of the Supreme Brahman and fully in control of his senses, he is the best of the Brahmanas. Therefore, it is very astonishing that you have acted impudently toward him.
So, Brahmaji, he doesn't speak, he speaks straightforward. He definitely pacified the demigods, but at the same time, although Brahmaji sympathizes with the Indra and others, but he also chastised Indra and demigods. So sometimes in the name of sympathizing with a person, we don't try to actually point out their mistakes so that they learn from the mistakes. We just speak some just goody-goody words. But Brahmaji definitely pacified them, but he straightforwardly pointed out them. He said that you have definitely committed a great wrong, Kritam Mahat. You did not welcome the Brahmana who is fixed in Brahman, Brahmishtam Brahmanam Dantam, who had a controlled mind, because Aishwaryan Nabhyanandita, because of your wealth and power. So Brahmaji condemns the neglect. So what are the qualifications of Brihaspati? Brihaspati was very much in control of his senses. He was aware of the Supreme Brahman, and he was definitely the most qualified Brahmana. Many times when somebody's scholarship he is compared with the Brihaspati. Prithu Maharaj is Brihaspatim Brahma Vade, in his spiritual knowledge is compared to Brihaspati. Another point which Prabhupada talks about is familiarity breeds contempt. Lord Brahma wanted to impress upon the demigod that one's guru should not be disrespected under any circumstances. So because Brihaspati was coming every day, they thought that they did not need to show him special respect. That is a fault on the part of Indra. But as I mentioned in the previous this one, Brihaspati's fault was that Radha Govind Maharaj says that the demigods committed a mistake by not showing respect to him, but Brihaspati overly punished them by becoming invisible and not giving any opportunity for them to beg forgiveness. So when somebody may commit a mistake, but another is when you overly punish a person. The over punishment, because Mahabharata explains that one of the symptoms of lust is that punishing more than required. When the punishment is disproportionate to the mistake, that is a symptom of a lust. So that is why Jnanam Kvachit Tachana Sangha Varjitam, that Brihaspati had that attachment towards that being respected, just pointed out there. So here, since he came every day, they thought that they do not need to show him special respect. As it is said, familiarity breeds contempt. But being very much displeased, Brihaspati immediately left Indra's palace. And then Prabhupada says that, therefore never disrespect an acharya, because the spiritual master has given the transcendental knowledge. Chakshudana dileye janme janme prabhu se. But the demigods being puffed up by their material possessions were disrespectful to their guru. Acharya mam vijaniyam navamanyeta karhichit. So all the demigods were affected and Lord Brahma condemns their neglect. Tasyayam anayasyasit parebhyova parabhavah prakshnibhya svavairibhya samriddhanam cha yatsura.
Because of your misbehavior towards Brihaspati, you have been defeated by the demons. My dear demigod, since the demons were weak, having been defeated by you several times, how else could you, who were so advanced in opulence, be defeated by them?
So here we see that you are actually very powerful, you have defeated the demons many times, but because of you have disrespected the guru, therefore the demons who are weak, they were able to defeat you. So as stated in the Shastras, when one disrespects a respectable superior, one loses his longevity and the results of his pious activities, and in this way one is degraded. So I think this is a paraphrasing of the verse 10th canto, I think 4th chapter last verse. 10th canto, 4th chapter, last verse, which says that when a person disrespects a great soul, lifespan, what is that verse? Mahat Atikram. Because of Mahat Atikram, one loses all these things, lifespan, one's pious credits, one's beauty, luster. There's a long list is mentioned. Prabhupada just paraphrased here. Magavan dushatapashya prakshninam gurvatikramat sampratyupachitan bhuya kavyam aradhya bhaktita adadiran nilayanam mamapi brugu devata.
O Indra, your enemies, the demons, were extremely weak because of their disrespect towards Shukracharya. But since they have now worshipped Shukracharya with great devotion, they have again become powerful by their devotion to Shukracharya. They have increased their strength so much that now they are even able to easily seize my abode from me.
So here Brahmaji is mentioning a very strong statement. He is saying that disrespect to the Guru is a cause of disaster and respect to the Guru is a cause of good fortune. In fact, the demons, because of the respect towards Shukracharya, they have become so powerful that they can even take away even my abode. That is how much they have become powerful. So, Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayati. Yeah, depending on the level of a person, if you remember in that Bhaktirasama Sindhu, Rupa Goswami quotes the verse, if a person, if you offend a person in the stage of bhava, then you get a greater reaction. Depending on the person whom you offend and depending on the degree of the offense. If you offend a great person, and if you commit even a great offense, even for a small time, the reaction will be much greater. And if you offend a person who is not at the level of bhava, somebody who is at the level of maybe a devotee at a lower level, or then one will get a little less reaction. And in general, even if you offend somebody who is non-devotee, you may get some reaction, it's a material reaction, but the other part of the reaction is that because of that attitude of disrespecting towards a common person, that attitude will slowly pervade towards in our dealings with the devotees also. So therefore, it is best to be respectful towards everyone. Shukracharya, yeah, he may not be a pure devotee, but he is a great Brahmana. Being a Brahmana, he has spiritual powers, certain levels of powers. He is a little Karma Mishra Bhakta, but he is a Brahmana. So by respecting the Brahmana properly, so they got those powers. Brihaspati also is a great Brahmana, but he had certain attachments. Shukracharya also attachments. Shukracharya is also given as an example for that Jnanam Kvachitachana Sangha Varjitam, because he had attachment towards the wealth. That's why he would try to be the priest of the demons. But they get their power. There are different degrees of Brahmanas, Vaishnavas. So here, so when a person has disrespected the Guru, the solution is actually proper respect. Just like it is said that if you fall down in a ground, you have to again take shelter of the same ground to get up. Or another place in the 7th canto, it's explained. If a person commits certain seva aparad while worshipping the Shaligram Shila, while worshipping the deity, one of the solutions is explained is that, okay, one should chant the chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Another way it is explained is that worship the deity with proper rules, properly following the rules. That sense. So here, 24th verse. Tripishtapam kim ganayantya bedya. Mantra bruguna manushikshitartha navipra govinda gavishvarana भवन्ति अभद्राणि नरेश्वराणाम्।
Because of their firm determination to follow the instructions of Shukracharya, his disciples, the demons, are now unconcerned about the demigods. In fact, kings or others who have determined faith in the mercy of the Brahmanas, cows, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, and who always worship these three, are always strong in their position.
So here he says that Tripishtapam gim ganayantyabedya mantra bhrugunam anushikshitartha. These demons intent on following instruction of Shukracharya and having unbreakable counsel. Anushikshitartha means deciding to follow the instructions. Bhrugunam, of the disciples of Bhrugumuni like Shukracharya. Abedya mantra, whose determination to carry out the order of spiritual master is unbreakable. Therefore, they do not care at all for the devatas. Tripishtapam kam ganayanti. Ganayanti means they care for. They do not at all care for the demigods, including Brahma. And then, but then the third and fourth line he gives a pacification. So he says, Na vipra govinda gavishwaranam. Bhavanti abhadrani nareshwaranam. That means those who worship the Govinda, cows and the Brahmanas, for them there cannot be any misfortunes. So far he is saying that the demons, because they are worshipping, they are having the unbreakable counsel of Shukracharya, they don't care for anybody. But still, you have the quality of respecting the Brahmanas, cows and the Supreme Lord. So therefore, there will not be any misfortune. Please do not worry. So he says that pacification among the Sama, Dama and Danda Beda, pacifying the demons or offering some gifts to them or punishing them is definitely not possible at this circumstance. And even causing dissension among them, Beda, that will also be not possible. Because all these demons have a one-pointed attention in following Shukracharya. They obey the mantra. They have indivisible counsel. Therefore, you cannot even cause dissension among them. So therefore, but still, those who are merciful to the Brahmanas, cows and Govinda have no misfortunes. After speaking the first two lines, by talking about the situation of the demons, the demigods become little actually demoralized. So that means that we have no hope to regain our abodes. So better we die only. Then the Brahma pacifies them with the third and fourth words that you have actually worshipped the Brahmanas, cows and the Supreme Lord. So just like even Bhishma Dev told the Pandavas, Aho kashtam aho nyayam yadyuyam dharma nandana jivitum nargata klishtam vipra dharma achyutashraya. Vipra dharma achyutashraya means you did not deserve to remain aloof under those tribulations, yet you are protected by the vipra, brahmanas, god and religion, achyuta and the supreme law. So therefore, the same way the Prabhupada explains here in the purport, one who worships Govinda must satisfy him by worshipping the Brahmanas and the cows. If a government worships the Brahmanas, the cows and Krishna, it is never defeated anywhere. Otherwise, it must always be defeated and condemned everywhere. At the present moment, all over the world, governments have no respect for the Brahmanas, cows and Govinda, and consequently, there are chaotic conditions all over the world. And then, now finally, Lord Brahma is giving a practical solution. So, he has given the different philosophy, but you have to give some practical tips of, okay, how to go about from the situation. So, Brihaspati is nowhere to be found, but now what to do? Now, he is telling them to follow the, go to Vishwarup. Tad Vishwarupam Bhajatashu Vipram Tapasvinam Tvashramatatmavantam सदाजिदोर्तान् सविदास्यते वो यदि क्षमिद्यद्वमुतास्य कर्म।
O demigods, I instruct you to approach Visharup, the son of Tvashta, and accept him as your guru. He is a pure and very powerful Brahmana undergoing austerity and penances. Pleased by your worship, he will fulfill your desires, provided that you tolerate his being inclined to the side with the demons.
So, Brahmaji is telling, you go to Visharup, he is a very prudent Brahmana, he is a very pure Brahmana, performs great austerity. He will definitely fulfill your desires, accept him as a priest. But only thing is that you have to tolerate his impartiality. You have to tolerate his being partial to the demons. It's actually not partiality. It is like, because the demons and demigods are related to him, both on the mother side and father side. Therefore, he tries to be, as a Brahmana, he is supposed to be impartial. That's what Maharaj explained in the class. He tries to do good for both. You have to tolerate that part, but he will definitely fulfill your desires. Brahmaji is indicating that. So, everything has a certain asterisk marks. Yadi kshamishyadvam utasya karma. Brahmaji is mentioning that the beginning itself, but still you will see what mistakes they commit. We will recite the next verse together. Shri Shuka Vivacha तयेवं मुदिता राजन् ब्रह्मणा विगतज्वर ऋषिं त्वाश्रम उपव्रज्य परिष्वज्येदमब्रुवन्।
श्री सुखदेव गोस्वामी कंटिन्यूड, दस एडवाइज द लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा एंड रिलीव्ड ऑफ देयर एंजाइटी ऑल द डेमिगॉड्स वेंट टू सेज विश्वरूप द सन ऑफ त्वष्टा। माय डियर किंग, दे एम्ब्रेस्ड हिम एंड स्पोक एज फॉलोज।
श्री देवा वोचुः वयं ते अतिहय प्राप्ता आश्रमान भद्रमस्तु ते काम संपाद्य ताम तात पितृनाम समयाचितः।
The demigod said, beloved Vishwaroop, may there be all good fortune for you. We the demigods have come to your ashram as your guests. Please try to fulfill our desires according to the time, since we are on a level of your parents.
So Brahma, the demigods are saying that Vishwarupa is like the nephew of the demigods. So they are saying that we are your fathers, and please fulfill our desires according to the time, since we are on the level of your fathers. Just like the demigods, Maharaj explained in one class that just like the demigods, all of us have also lost our treasure of love of God. Demigods have lost the treasure of their kingdom, their opulence. But all living entities, we have also lost our treasure of love of God because of disrespect and neglect. But so we, just like the demigods approached Vishwarup, they approached Lord Brahma and then Vishwarup. Similarly, we also need to approach the spiritual master who will guide us to get the treasure back. To get the treasure of love of God back. Isn't there is a symbolic lesson which he gave. Putranam hi paro dharma pitra susrushanam satam api putravatam brahman kimuta brahmacharinam.
O Brahmana, the highest duty of a son, even though he has sons of his own, is to serve his parents. And what to speak of a son who is a brahmachari?
So he says that highest duty of a son, even though he has sons of his own, is to serve his parents. And what to speak if the person is a brahmachari? So he is telling that, they are telling to Vishwarup that you are actually a brahmachari. Even if you had your own sons, still the highest duty of you is to actually serve your parents. And we are all actually your parents. So similarly, the highest duty of a disciple, even though he may have his own counselees, is to first to serve the spiritual master. Because sometimes when we try to preach, sometimes when we get carried away by the different followers or different people whom we guide, we actually put our service and loyalty or the dedication towards our superior, that goes in the background, and the relationship with the our followers, that becomes more prominent. So to the extent the relationship with the superiors, the spiritual master, the siksha gurus, to the extent that becomes more, that is more prominent, to that extent we can actually transform, to that extent we will become empowered to transform the other followers. So this sometimes, like for example, I forget the point what I am thinking. So many times one gets carried away by the followers, but here the demigods are reminding them. Acharyo Brahmano Murti Pita Murti Prajapate Brata Marutpate Murtir Mata Sakshakshite Stanuhu Dayaya Bhagini Murtir Dharmasyatmati Tiswayam Agnir Abhyagato Murti Sarva Bhutani Chatmanaha.
The Acharya, the spiritual master who teaches all the Vedic knowledge and gives initiation by offering the sacred thread, is the personification of the Vedas. Similarly, a father personifies Lord Brahma, a brother King Indra, a mother the planet Earth, and a sister Mercy. A guest personifies religious principles, an invited guest personifies the demigod Agni, and all living entities personify Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
If you had heard Srila Prabhupada's lecture on one of the either appearance or disappearance days of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I think many times it's played in our temple. So one of that famous lecture, Prabhupada actually breaks into tears, and he tells, at one point he says that actually all of you disciples, you are all representatives of my Guru Maharaj. And he expresses gratitude towards them, because you came to assist me, so therefore I am able to execute the instructions of my spiritual master, therefore you are all representatives of my spiritual master. In that sense, although he was a worldwide acharya, but still having many thousands of followers, but in his consciousness the servant of being the spiritual master, that was actually most predominant. That is what we find in that particular lecture. So the demigods mentioned that same point to Vishwarup. So in this particular verse, 29th and 30th verse, they say that Acharya Brahmano Murti, Acharya the personification of all the Vedas, Pita Murti Prajapate, father personifies Brahma, Brata Marutpate, brother actually personifies Indra, a mother personifies the planet Earth, and a sister personifies Mercy, and an unexpected guest personifies religious principles. Deya Dharmasya Matiti Swayam. Invited guest personifies Agni. Agnir Abhyagato Murti. And all living entities personify Vishnu, the Supreme Lord. So we will see how, why they speak this verse. The Acharya, one who teaches the Vedas, personify the Vedas. So therefore, the demigod's implication in speaking this verse is that they say that the uninvited guest personified Dharma, then what to speak of us? In fact, all beings personify the Supreme Lord. So therefore, they are speaking this verse in order to show that you should actually fulfill our desires. All living entities personify the Supreme Lord. We are also living entities. Moreover, we are the demigods. We are uninvited guests. That means they can fall under many of these categories. So you should actually respect them, just like you respect the Supreme Lord. Respecting them and fulfilling our desire is actually a principle of Dharma. And because I am Indra, In that way they are actually appealing to them. So Prabhupada says that this means that one should not be neglected as, no one should be neglected as an inferior, because Paramatma is situated in everyone's heart and everyone should be respected as a temple of the Supreme Lord. Tasmat pitrunam artanam artim paraparabhavam tapasa panayam stata sandesham kartu marhasi.
Dear son, we have been defeated by your enemies and therefore we are very much aggrieved. Please mercifully fulfill our desires by relieving our distress through the strength of your austerities. Please fulfill our prayers.
So they are saying that please take away the distress of your parents who have been painfully defeated. We have been defeated by our enemies and therefore we are very much aggrieved. Please fulfill our desires. So in this section, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj explained that the demigods are going, they are basically requesting Vishwarupa to become their guru, because to become their priest, priest is also a one type of guru. Vishwarupa is in the position of their son, but they are requesting him to take the superior position as a priest and relieve them of their distress. So in this section Maharaj said that when we approach a guru, one should not approach a guru as a fashion. One should not approach a guru with a material desires in mind. So Bhagavatam says that tasmat gurum prapadyeta jigyashu shreya uttamam. Jigyashu shreya uttamam. One should approach the guru for the ultimate benefit. In fact, before that verse in the Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, the previous verses talk about the futility of the sense gratification in this world and the futility of sense gratification in the heavenly pleasure. And after talking about the futility of all the sense gratification, then it is said that tasmat gurum prapagyate jigyashu shreya uttamam. One should approach the guru to obtain something which is not obtainable either in the material, in this planet or in the heavenly planets, for the ultimate benefit. But here the demigods are approaching Vishwarupa for getting their material abode. So whenever a person approaches the guru for something, getting something material in return, that means he has certain material attachments. And that can actually end up, that can result in certain frustration. Yeah, the ideal this one is that one should approach the guru for spiritual, getting spiritual knowledge to advance on a spiritual platform. But here they are approaching for the material benefit. Yeah, next verse. Vrini mahe tvapadhyayam brahmishtam brahmanam gurum yatanjasa vijeshyama sapatnam stavatejasa.
Since you are completely aware of the Supreme Brahman, you are a perfect Brahmana, and therefore you are the spiritual master of all orders of life. We accept you as our spiritual master and director, so that by the power of your austerity, we may easily defeat the enemies who have conquered us.
So basically they are saying that you are a greatly austere Brahmana, you are fixed in Brahman, Brahmishtam Brahmanam Gurum, you are under teacher as our guru. We select you, a brahmana fixed in Brahman, and a teacher as our guru, so that we will be able to easily defeat our enemies by your power. So they want Vishwarup to utilize his brahminical power of austerity for getting their kingdom. So that is what they are demanding. You please actually give your all your credits of your tapasya for, so that we can get our kingdom. So that is why Prabhupada is saying that one must approach a particular type of guru to execute a particular type of duty. Although Vishwarupa was inferior to the demigods accepted him as their guru to conquer the demons. Na garhayanti hyarteshu yavishtangra bivadanam chandobhyonyatra na brahman vayo jaishtasya karanam.
The demigods continued, do not fear criticism of being younger than us. Such etiquette does not apply in regard to Vedic mantras. Except in relationship to Vedic mantras, seniority is determined by age. But one may offer respectful obeisances even to younger person who is advanced in chanting the Vedic mantras. Therefore, although you are junior in relationship to us, you may become our priest without hesitation.
So Vishwarup hesitates by saying that I am actually younger to you, I cannot accept a superior position. Then demigods say that the wise people do not criticize a junior in age for fulfilling one's purposes. So generally the etiquette should be followed, but when somebody who is junior but is having greater knowledge and realization, that person can be accepted as a superior in order to gain knowledge. So except in relationship to the Vedic mantras, seniority is determined by age. But one may offer respectful obeisances even to a younger person who is advanced in chanting the Vedic mantras or transcendental knowledge. Sukadeva Goswami was accepted by all the sages although he was only 16 years old, because he had a realization and because he was madly in love with Krishna. So those spiritual qualifications reverse the hierarchy. So therefore, from the point of view of the hearer, even if somebody is younger to him, one should be ready to take knowledge from him if he is advanced in knowledge, if he is advanced in realization. But of course, from the point of view of the speaker, one should try to follow the etiquette. One should not try to instruct the superiors. Vishwarupa was reluctant. He was reluctant to occupy the position of the superior, because the demigods were his fathers. Uddhava was reluctant to occupy the post of being instructor of Vidura, because Vidura was much advanced in age, because there was another opportunity. So therefore he directed him to Maitreya Rishi. But Isulna Sadhanath Maharaj explained, but sometimes as a service we may have to accept the role of instructing, although we may be junior in age. As a service we may have to play that role. So Vishwarup, although he knew the etiquette, but in the mood of a servant to the demigods, he actually agreed to become their guru. So that is also an important thing. Demigods explain the principles regarding seniority here. So Prabhupada explains that seniority in knowledge, one may be senior without being advanced in age. Even if one is not old, one gains seniority if he is senior in knowledge. So this chapter talks about the subtleties of the principle of respect. So many different lessons. Another example is Mukunda and Raghunandan. And Mahaprabhu asked Mukunda, who is the father and who is the son? What is your relation with Raghunandan? Mukunda said that actually Raghunandan is our father and I am his son. Because whoever gives inspiration to practice bhakti, that person becomes the father. So Raghunandan's devotion is the inspiration for our entire family to practice bhakti. So in that sense, the principle of respect, subtleties of respect is mentioned. And Chanakya Pandit says that one may accept education from a member of a lower social order. The Brahmana, the members of the most elevated Varna, are teachers, but a person in a lower family such as the family of Kshatriyas, Vaishyas or even Shudras may be accepted as a teacher if he has knowledge. So bhakti or transcendental knowledge reverses the hierarchy. That's what we see here. We'll just take a few last verses. Shri Rishir Vacha अभ्यर्थित सुरगण पौरहित्ये महातप सविश्वरूपस्थानाः प्रसन्न श्लक्ष्ण यागिरा।
Sukadeva Goswami continued, when all the demigods requested the great Vishwaroop to be their priest, Vishwaroop, who was advanced in austerities, was very pleased. He replied to them as follows.
So, Vishwaroop, even another example, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the Gopal as a Gopal Guru. In a sense, that's another example of accepting a junior as a guru. So, then Vishwaroop replies, Vigarchitam dharmashilai brahma varchavupavyayam katam numadvido nata lokeshai rabiyachitam pratyakyasyati tachishyai sayeva swartha uchyate.
Vishwaroop said, O demigods, although the acceptance of priesthood is decried as causing the loss of previously acquired brahminical power, how can someone like me refuse to accept your personal request? You are all exalted commanders of the entire universe. I am your disciple and must take many lessons from you. Therefore, I cannot refuse you. I must agree for my own benefit.
So here, Vishwaroop, demigods are requesting Vishwaroop to take the position of a priest and perform yajna on his behalf. But it is described in the duties of in the occupations of a brahmana, both in the 7th canto and the 11th canto, the different occupations of a brahmana are explained. And among that it is explained that the occupation of a brahmana as a priest, that is considered to be the low occupation of a brahmana. Because as a priest, the brahmana has to accept the sinful reactions of the person for whom he has to, on whose behalf he has to become the priest. So, there are gradations of the occupation. The highest occupation of a brahmana is to actually collect the food grains which are actually left forth in the marketplace, as it is explained. So he doesn't get contaminated with the sin. But Vishwaroop, he says that although I have to accept the occupation of a priest, that means that I will have to accept the sinful reactions of you, and I will have to exhaust all my austerities, but still I will accept this as a service to all of you. So that is actually the mood of a Vaishnava guru. Again, Isolnath Radhanath Maharaj highlighted this point. When a guru accepts the disciples, that he actually accepts the sinful reactions of a disciple. But a guru accepts the sins of a disciple, it is actually many times after the initiation, the guru actually becomes sick and he gets this thing. As one of the principles it is explained is that one should not accept too many disciples. Prabhupada also mentions in that, I think, Prithu Maharaj's instruction to the citizens, one of the words. If a person does not have the spiritual purity, one should not accept too many disciples, otherwise he will fall down by accepting the reactions of a disciple. But the principle is sometimes the guru accepts the sinful reactions as a service to them. He is willing to go through that suffering by accepting those disciples. But from the point of view of a disciple, he should not become a burden on the guru. Okay, he accepts the guru, but after initiation, one should follow the principle strictly and one should not become a burden on the guru. One should not become a burden on the guru. But the real love for the guru is that how we share more and more responsibilities of the guru and how we should not become a burden on the guru. But here, because this point is highlighted here, because the demigods are actually, in one sense, they are going to transfer their reactions to Vishwaroop. That's what they are requesting Vishwaroop. You become a priest and accept our reactions and you exhaust your actually brahminical piety. So that should not be the mood of a disciple. They should try to share the responsibilities and anxieties of a guru and not become a burden of the guru. So here, Vishwaroop, he becomes the guru of the demigods, but is actually in the mood of the disciple. The mood of a real guru is that he is in the mood of a servant. In the mood of a servant, he becomes a guru. That is why Vishwarup, he accepts a superior position in the mood of being a servant of the demigods. So therefore, I am your disciple and must take many lessons from you. Therefore, I cannot refuse you. So I must agree for my own benefit. So Prabhupada talks about this principle. One who accepts the pose of a spiritual master neutralizes the sinful reactions of the yajaman, the one on whose behalf he performs yajna. As the result of the pious acts previously performed by the priest as spiritual master are diminished. Therefore, priesthood is not accepted by the learned brahmanas. Nevertheless, the greatly learned brahmana Vishwarup became the priest of the demigods because of his profound respect for them. So we will find the future verses will be discussed tomorrow. But Vishwarup and the demigod's quality, we can see Vishwarup, how he is so lenient and how he is willing to exhaust his piety, his austerity, and he is willing to actually accept the sinful reactions of the demigods by accepting a lower occupation of a priest. He knew that, but still as a service he does that. That means he is very lenient and he is very accommodating. You will find the demigods still maintain their, they have their ulterior motives, and Vishwarup is accommodating all those motives. But the demigods, when they come to know that Indra actually, when Indra comes to know that Vishwarup is also offering some oblations on behalf of the demons, he becomes suspicious. A disciple is supposed to trust the guru, but Indra, through his spies, he comes to know these things, and then he becomes angry, and then he cuts off Vishwarup. Vishwarup's head. So Vishwarup is a very lenient spiritual master, but because the demigods, they maintained that material attachment. Indra maintains his material attachment, he cuts off the head of Vishwarup. So Maharaj explained in one class that actually Indra spoke previously those words condemning himself in front of the assembly at how he became maddened with pride and he committed a mistake. So very profound words, but still ultimately he ends up actually cutting off the head of Vishwarup. So that means, although he spoke those profound words condemning his pride, but somewhere deep within the heart he still maintained that material attachment. So in this episode we will see that the demigods, because they were maintaining their material attachments, they commit more and more mistakes. That's why the 10th offense, the holy name. So Maharaj explained in that class, one may have lot of knowledge, like Indra had a lot of knowledge, and when he came to his senses, he condemned himself. But when will that knowledge actually transform into realization? So he said, knowledge will transform into realization when we perform devotional service with humility. Then one will get the knowledge transformed into realization. And then even when a person gets realization, how will that realization be sustained? Because it appears that the demigods got realization of their mistake after Brihaspati left that assembly. But they were not able to sustain that realization. So that realization can be sustained only by the grace of Krishna. And that is again dependent on how we continue to perform devotional service with humility. So, in this way the further verses, I think that can be taken up tomorrow. So it can be taken properly. So, I will stop here. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.